better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Where's something? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Boy, is it fall or what? I haven't had a fire yet, but I certainly felt like I could have a couple of days. I'm just not ready to start cleaning out the wood stove and hauling wood and all that sort of thing, hoping that I actually, you know, get everything in there right so that the fire starts on the first try. But it's beautiful this time of year, really beautiful. The smells in the air are so gorgeous. And it's out of town for a couple of days, but made it back in time to get to this festival farmers market. So I have started my week off as I like to start it off. Hope you've had a good weekend. Maybe you went to the harvest fair. There's so many events going on. And I feel really lucky to have tonight's guests because I know that Marisa Gugiana keeps herself busy. So Marisa, welcome back to Mouthful.
Thank you.
And we also have your dad, Ritz Gugiana. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure for me as well.
So I want to talk, we want to talk about Sonoma Direct, which is a newish venture. But before we do that, let's talk about the, you know, the sadly gone Ritz Distributing. Ritz was such a presence for so long here. When was it? When did it start?
This would have been our 50th anniversary.
50th.
Yeah, yeah. My father founded it in 1959, mm-hmm. and he passed away at a young age of 49. In 1979, and so I had been running it for the last 30 years.
Uh-huh. And was it just the shift in things and economic times and stuff that?
You know, definitely the economy had a lot to do with it, mm-hmm. But it was just a weird set of circumstances, you know, kind of a perfect storm of financial events that came somewhat out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And it's too long and boring of a story probably to go into the details of the thing. But it just took me totally by surprise. And last year, if you can remember, about a year ago this time, what was happening with the financial markets. And
everything just the bottom fell out of it all.
Yeah. And the banks were pulling out of everything. And so they just kept strengthening their ties and lessening our borrowing ability and just took us down this path that at the end they left us with no working capital at all. So we had no choice. They basically froze our assets at that point. So
I don't understand that financial world in a lot of detail, but it amazes me that we don't have banks that work with businesses that have been here for 50 years to get through things.
Yeah, this was a larger bank, not a community bank. But even the smaller banks now have so many more restrictions that the Fed puts them under. So even though there's so much more money supply that's come in with the stimulus plan and whatnot, they're restricted from being able to lend it based on the requirements that they have to hold up to.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it was a shock, you know, total shock to the system. With me, I'm still January 14th of this year was when we closed our doors, and, mm-hmm. and I'm still having to work through somewhat of the wind down process, but it's really tapped us personally as well. So
sure.
it's been we're still reeling, you know, with this for some period of time to come.
Sure. Well, you have my deep empathy and condolences for it. It was an important part of the business up here in the North
you.
Bay. Sonoma Direct has overlapped with it. You found mm-hmm. Sonoma Direct, what, 5 years ago?
Four
and a half.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of Sonoma Direct?
Well, maybe I'll start it
okay.
and let I'll tell the boring side of it, and let Marisa talk about the more exciting part of where we changed direction. But it was really kind of an outgrowth of Ritz Food Service, and we were looking to do something to create some kind of a distinction against the Sysco's and the U.S. food services of the world, and we thought that custom cutting meats would be one way that we could do that, and so that was initially why we bought the business and started it, and right about that same time, Marisa was coming back from New York and hadn't gotten her roots reset and still had designs on being a playwright. And
really? I didn't know that part of you.
So I had asked her to come in and just kind of help with office stuff, administration and that. And but before she knew it, I was kind of leaving her alone and up to her own devices. So
I knew there was a master plan.
And so then from there, she started seeing, you know, potential new direction. And so
mm-hmm. so it started, you were telling me the story the other day of how things started. Do you want to sort of recoup that?
Yeah, basically for our work with Ritz Food Service was bringing in boxed beef, you know, big cuts of meat, making steaks to order, and a lot of frozen meat coming from the middle of the country and going back out into smaller boxes. And I just thought, gosh, if I'm going to spend any time here, I'm going to have to make this a little more interesting for myself. And I had some kind of aha driving to work one day and seeing lambs out in the field. And I thought, I wonder where that meat goes. I don't really see that much local lamb. And maybe I'm just not paying attention. So I just started calling farmers and saying, what are you doing with your lamb? Where does that go? And most of it was going to Dixon and mm-hmm. Just going into commercial meat, ending up on feedlots. And so I thought, well, maybe it could stay here. And it seemed simple enough. I'm still trying to figure it out. But that was kind of, you know, that was a shift for us. And then we started to be sort of the local meat company.
Mm-hmm. And you have a butcher who works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about him.
Jarrett, we inherited Jarrett with the building, basically. He had worked for the former owner for many years. And he's a master butcher, and he's really kept the business going. I mean, he has this skill set as a butcher that you just never see anymore. He's really... Mm-hmm. He's really talented, and he's great with customers. He walks them through stuff. He knows the animal inside and out. He can make people comfortable with their decisions, and he also cares for the building. And it's uh-huh. just,
and we should say you're located. It feels like Southern Sebastopol, but it's actually northwestern Petaluma.
Yeah, it's technically there's this little strip of Petaluma that runs to the west of the of 101.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's out behind the Wash U House on Stony Point.
Uh-huh. And how does it work now? Do you get whole animals from various ranches?
Yeah, well, we have lots of different sort of revenue streams.
Uh-huh.
One thing we do is we aggregate, we buy from several ranches and we sell meat as Sonoma Direct meat. Lamb is that way. It's pretty much the only thing that we do that way. Mm. And then we also buy from some local ranches and sell as their farm name and keep the farm identity the whole way
okay.
through.
Uh-huh.
We do that for Gleason Ranch and Devil's Gulch and
Yeah, Devil's
Family.
Gulch, they have pork, goat? Do they have goat?
We sell his pork. He also has rabbits.
That's right, rabbit. Yeah, he was on Mouthful about maybe 6 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark's great.
Yeah.
We don't sell his rabbit, but he does that. He does farmers markets. And then we also just do a lot of butchering. We work with a lot of farmers that you would see at your farmers market, and we just basically cut the meat up for them, package mm-hmm. it, put their label on it, maybe make sausages for them or things mm-hmm. like that.
What sort of government restrictions do you have to deal with to do this sort of thing? Mm. I mean, I know somebody I was talking to, it might have been somebody at Sonoma Meat and Poultry or something, just sort of explaining the ins and outs that they always have an inspector mm-hmm. on site.
Yeah. Well, if you slaughter, there's always an inspector.
If you slaughter.
Yeah. Uh-huh. A USDA inspector has to see every single animal that's slaughtered in a USDA plant. And but since we're just a butcher or a processing plant, mm-hmm. they're not there all the time, but they generally come every day.
They do. They stop by every day.
Yeah, usually. And our plant smells really nice, and it's out in the country.
It does.
Really
I've been
sweet
there.
Out there.
It's
so they
really a great
stay.
Place.
They usually hang out uh-huh. for several hours every day. So it's rather pleasant.
So they fight over who gets to go to Sonoma Direct.
Yeah, I think they're like, I don't want to go to the poultry plant.
Well, they're on a rotation basis, typically 6 months at a crack, mm-hmm. and so they have a circuit of several different plants that mm-hmm. they'll visit, and
then they don't get to know anyone. Real
yeah, to
well.
Get too friendly or too comfortable with, you know, the practices. And so you need a new set of eyes. And, you know, we appreciate what they do because they mm-hmm. do help keep us safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, one thing I think would be great to explain, so many people worry about all this E. coli thing with hamburger and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my answer is always, you know, don't eat burgers that have been, you know, have 10 different cows in them and have been frozen in, you know, South Chicago in some big freezer for 6 months. But Absolutely. Explain the difference when you're doing butchering on a mm-hmm. small scale as opposed to this huge, huge, huge scale. What is it?
Ground beef is a really scary thing to do. And it's it gets very specialized because there are a lot of restrictions. It's really easy for bacteria to get into ground meat and multiply. So what happens is, you know, there's only a couple plants that really do it because no one else wants to take the risk. So mm-hmm. every, you know, all the cold cows from the dairy industry, all of the old beef that's not delicious enough to make it into steaks, like all this meat gets sent down to, like, I don't really know, but maybe 5 plants in LA or whatever it is, and gets thrown into this big, you know, melting pot of meat. It is really gross. So any meat you buy, unless you know the ranch that it came from, I think it is kind of scary. I mean, they do tests on it, but, you know. So we're getting meat from a ranch, and maybe like 5 cows went into it, uh-huh. but they all came from the same place.
Yeah, they're kind of, yeah.
It's totally traceable in a really different way.
Yeah, and then I guess one other thing you can also do is you buy a cut of meat from your butcher, mm-hmm. and you have your butcher grind that specific piece of meat.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, you can do that too.
And cook it enough. You know, if you get it up, I'm not sure. I think it's over 135 internal temperature. You'll kill that.
Yeah. Then we get into the whole rare issue.
Right. It's...
you know, life has its day. You have to pick your dangers. You're listening to Mouthful here on KRCB. We're talking with Marisa and Ritz Gugiana of Sonoma Direct.
You's a good butcher, and I like your meat. I know your cutting can't be beat. I like it like that. Yes, I like it like that. It's so good. That's why I like it like that.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in and sticking with us tonight. We're talking about the art of butchery, really, and Sonoma Direct. Sonoma Direct working directly with Sonoma County Farms and Ranches. You know, for so long, when I first started doing what I do professionally, writing, you know, it just made no sense to me. You drive through the fields, drive past the farms, and know that that meat never, ever made it to the table in Sonoma mm-hmm. County. And that just didn't make a lot of sense. But there's a lot of issues that, there's a lot of things that need to be in place for that to happen. And one of them is a slaughter facility. Mm-hmm. That's...
Yeah,
I know that's an issue you have to deal with because you need to be able to get the meat that you're going to work with.
Yeah, it has to be slaughtered in a USDA mm-hmm. facility, slaughterhouse.
And how many do we? I know it's sort of a not in my backyard sort of business, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely super NIMBY. I think it's like the ultimate NIMBY kind of thing. But there's one in Petaluma, just on Petaluma Boulevard South, called mm-hmm. Rancho. Mm-hmm. And they do beef and veal. And they're really an arm to the dairy industry more than a local beef industry. The coal cattle, like I was saying before, they go there, they get slaughtered, and then they become ground beef. And so that's, you know, with our dwindling dairy industry, it's really important for them too. To have Rancho and for our sort of burgeoning grass-fed beef culture here, it's important. And it's been up for sale.
Right. Didn't it almost sell a few years ago?
Yeah, it did sell to a developer. I think they were going to build condominiums, but they ended up giving up their option on it. It was right before the crash. And so now it's still in the hands of the original owners, and who knows what's going to happen to it. There's not really a next generation in place there. And then there's one lamb slaughterhouse in Occidental. Panazera.
Panazera, yeah.
Also, I don't really think there's an heir apparent to that one. And then everything else is pretty far away.
Yeah, I know what. Over in Sacramento.
There's a chicken slaughter in Sacramento. Fulton Processing on River Road. Is just started working with some local.
Yeah, they work with Gleason,
producers.
Right?
They work with Gleason.
Do they work with Sonoma Poultry? You know, Jim Reichert?
No.
He's still going out of county.
Yeah. It's really cool that they're working with Gleason. Mm-hmm. That was something that they hadn't done before. So that's really made it possible for them to sell their chickens. They're expensive, but much cheaper than they would be if they had to take 100 birds or whatever they kill a week all the way to Sacramento.
I mean, I've gotten so fond of Gleason, and I didn't get to the farm market in time today to get the leg thigh pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And those were all sold out. The last two times I've been at the market, those have been all sold out. But Gleason is just, that's good to know. Gleason is, they grow great birds, great tasting birds.
I know. They taste like chicken. That's what I
like. Yeah, and it's
like something.
It's just like with eggs. Once mm-hmm. you have really good eggs from your own chickens or, you know, a neighbor's chickens, it's impossible to go backwards.
I know.
And I find it the same with chicken.
Yeah. It's got that great fat on it. Just like you can't screw that chicken up. You just put it in the oven and it comes out really delicious.
Yeah, it does. So now you sell beef, veal, lamb, chicken,
duck.
You do duck. No, who's ducks? Various.
We do Salmon Creek and then Sonoma Artisan.
Foie gras.
But,
yeah,
they have duck items as well.
They have the most delicious duck magret.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it is good. The Salmon Creek, they do Muscovy ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Muscovy. I'm never sure which way is the right way to say that. But they're really big ducks, and they're totally pasture-raised. I don't know how they don't get eaten up by all kind of predator, but they're a heritage breed, and they have a nice long life, and they're really muscular, delicious, mm-hmm. flavorful birds.
So how do you distribute? How do people, who gets things from Sonoma Direct mostly?
Various ways. Uh-huh. We do some directly ourselves here locally. We also work with Sonoma Organics. In Mendocino and Napa counties primarily, but
we should say they're distribution company primarily produce, but started working with you a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And for all those people up on Sonoma Coast in Anderson Valley, you know, who don't have other people coming up there.
Yeah, it works out great because we both have relatively small order sizes, so mm-hmm. to be able to amalgamate that. Mm-hmm. And then we have a couple of distributors down in the Southern California market. And we have another distributor that does primarily mail order all over the country. I'm not even sure where they're located. Are they in Phoenix? Mm-hmm. Or
is that mail order to individuals?
Mm-hmm. And
right.
restaurants, yeah.
And to restaurants as mm-hmm. well.
They just do real specialty stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we're in the process of bringing on another distributor to do more of Northern California. It's a much larger meat distributor, but uh-huh. we can't say right now until we
sure.
finalize it.
But, so that's something where people would then go to whatever market they shop in, something like Big John's or Oliver's or whatever, and then they would see, oh, I want the Sonoma Direct, whatever.
Could be. Uh-huh. We don't really push our name that
much. Oh, you
much.
Don't? Okay.
I mean, we do some as the ranch. Mm-hmm. Designation, but a lot of it is just that it is local, you know, that it's uh-huh. Sonoma or Marin County products and that it is grass fed and it's, uh-huh. Pasture raised, family farm, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So what I think where we see our niche, I mean, definitely it's to get the products to the market and get them in the form that we'd like to see done, as the ranchers would like to see done. So if you take the example of lamb, not only were they going to Dixon and being put on feedlots, but it took the product downhill because now they're being grain fed or cereal mm-hmm. fed and so they're not grass fed any longer. And so it's not the same, it wasn't the same, meat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're able to assure that it is grass fed all the way till the end.
Yeah, that's great. And for just an individual consumer who wants something that you have, how do they get it? Do they? I mean, some people can just talk to. If you have, well, if you have, a relationship with somebody at your butcher
mm-hmm.
counter,
mm-hmm.
You can say, can you, you can order something, but can people contact you directly?
Yeah. I mean, we are a wholesale business and we don't have a storefront or anything,
right.
but if someone calls and wants something, I always say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we encourage them to use our retailers where it makes sense. But it's not always, they don't always buy everything that we have or
yeah.
whatever. So,
and I mean, I know
sure,
Santa Rosa Meat and Poultry has always done that too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you
have a whole bunch of people over, every Halloween I used to get like a big box of pork
mm-hmm.
from Sonoma Meat and Poultry, Santa Rosa Meat and Poultry, because I make pozole for, mm-hmm. 100 people. So, and there were always people, getting stuff for a barbecue or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. We're amenable to that.
As I can say, you have a good website. You have a website where everything is listed.
Yeah, we try and keep it updated.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the best at that, but yeah, I mean, I also was publishing a list every week that went out to people with the things that we had that were kind of left over, but were still fresh,
uh-huh.
that hadn't gone out. Like, we say we just had too many lamb shoulders or something. So
are you still doing
just,
it, putting out that list?
I'm not, but I'm going to start it again.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, I'm going to start it again.
That'd be great. So, Riz, you've watched this business. Probably watched it for longer than 30 years. I mean, because I'm sure you didn't start paying attention when you took over.
50 years.
50.
Yeah.
So how have you seen things change in Sonoma County when it comes to, I mean, we all know there's really bad traffic and there didn't used to be, mm-hmm. but when it comes to what people want, the way people eat, that whole sort of thing, what sort of changes have you seen?
50 years ago, I could probably name every restaurant that existed in, mm-hmm. in Santa Rosa, where I was born and still live. Obviously, I might be able to still do that now, but it'd be a lot longer list.
Yeah.
But it's gotten so much more diversified. There's so much more, ethnic taste, and as the community itself has become more diversified.
Mm-hmm.
and much more higher end. You know, 30 years ago, you almost needed to go to San Francisco to get,
a good taco for a while, you know.
Yeah, and now people don't think twice, about just staying here. We've mm-hmm. got just great food selections and some of our own celebrity chefs. Anyway, mm-hmm.
Because one thing you hear, and I've decided that I don't believe it, you hear all the time people don't cook anymore. I mean, there are even people who manage farmers markets and stuff, and they say, well, nobody cooks. And I was listening back to some old previous Mouthful episodes, and Jacques Pepin made the best point, and it's so obvious, it seems to me. He just says, well, they say nobody cooks, but look at what's available in produce sections. Look at the there used to be two kinds of lettuce. Mm-hmm. You know, now there's like 25.
Yeah.
He said, if nobody was cooking, if nobody was buying this food, you know, there'd be great trucks hauling it away and dumping it.
Right.
And it seems like, you know, ingredients in so many ways in the last, especially the last 15 years, have gotten so much better that, in my opinion, a lot of people are cooking.
Mm-hmm. Well, you couldn't get there weren't any farmers markets back that far. I mean, you couldn't buy local products. Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, in the mid-80s, it was really, when I started writing a column, it was in the mid-80s, and it was really difficult to get local products. There were a few places. Fiesta Market started having just like 5 or 6 local products. You could go to Kozlowski Farms. You could go to Farm Stance, but you couldn't find it in markets. And very slowly, and it started picking up a little bit of steam in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. When it comes to, but still, it just seems that people do cook.
Yeah.
People aren't all having, you know, hotshot chefs come into their kitchen and cook dinner for them, you know?
Yeah.
People are, stuff is selling and somebody's eating it.
I think people are really, I mean, also the Food Network and the sort of like obsession with recipes and with ingredients. And I mean, it's certainly reflected in people eating out more, but I think it's also reflected in people being more adventurous in their cooking and taking pride in making new things mm-hmm. and trying new things. And
well, I think there's a terrible dichotomy. I mean, here, because that's kind of the world that we all live in mm-hmm. here is eating great food and appreciating it. But on the other end, you know, there wasn't any fast food restaurants. I mean, McDonald's was barely coming, you know, 30 years ago, it was just getting started. And that certainly is not, I don't want to say that fast food is bad necessarily.
It's okay. You can, it's Mouthful.
But for a steady diet, you know, I don't think it works. So that's, and a lot of people get too lazy with that. Mm-hmm. It's affordable, but, sometimes it gets too easy.
Yeah, in the short-term cost, maybe it's affordable. The long-term cost, you know, who knows?
Have you seen the well-to-do above Lenox Avenue on that famous thoroughfare with their noses in the air? High hats and colored collars, white spats and $15, spending every dime for a wonderful time.
We are here with Aritz Gugiana and his daughter, Marisa Gugiana. Marisa is, you know, you are such a force of nature in so many ways, Marisa. You really, I so love everything that you're doing, and you do it in just with a soft little smile on your face, but it's so great. You're involved in the Secret Eating Society, which mm-hmm. just is a fabulous name.
Thanks.
You've done things, is it the Anti-Boredom League or the Anti-Boredom Society?
I don't know what they're...
I think I'm thinking
of the anti-boredom. We did our last event with them.
Yeah, and that was at the Handcar Regatta.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that, because I was so pleased that it went well.
Yeah, it was really great. Well, Anti-Boredom is our friend Sam's newly formed company, but he's been running this game with his two partners called SF0. And it's an online game that's like a scavenger hunt kind of imaginative game that is online. It's recorded online, but it forces you to get out into the real world and achieve tasks and report on it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we just kept thinking we wanted to do something with the Secret Eating Society, me and Sarah Domke, my Secret Eating Society co-founder. And so we decided to collaborate at the Handcar Regatta, and we did a assassin game, like a tag game, and then we followed it by having this huge sit-down meal, like right on the tracks by the races.
Oh, right on the tracks.
Yeah,
where'd you cook?
Like 15 feet away. We had roasted Gleason Ranch chicken.
But how did you cook?
Oh, where? At home.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't cooking right there?
No, we didn't cook right there.
Pretty close, though.
Yeah, it's pretty close around the block. And it was great. It was beautiful. Everyone came in costume. We had, kids there and a boa constrictor.
Really? Oh, cool. An assassin game is, I assume people have some sort of identifying marker on their bodies somewhere. And
well, we after working out many kinks the day of, we took pictures of people with a digital camera, and then we printed them out. And then we met all of the participants, and we gave them a picture of someone else that was in the game that didn't come with.
So you had to get, you had to identify the person.
So you had to find them at the game, and we just weren't really sure how difficult that was going to be because we hadn't done it, and it was pretty difficult. I mean, there were lots of people I know that were at that event that day, and I didn't see them. You know, it was pretty hard. And people are in costume and everything. So most people found their marks by the end of the day, but there were still some unsolved mysteries when we came to the dinner table. Mm-hmm. So,
and then you sat down there and had dinner.
Yeah, and then we sat and ate, and we just had, delicious meal.
Roasted Gleason chicken.
Yeah, we had roasted chicken, and Tyson Drecker, that's a chef at Fisher Vineyards, and also lives in the neighborhood, he cooked dinner for us, and we had, mashed potatoes and salad, and I made just these enormous apple pies, and he made ginger ice cream, and we had, we called it Hobo's Delight. It was a salmon rillette, and it was just... It was really sweet.
It sounds like so much fun.
It was really fun, yeah.
And I love that idea of just having this big dinner right there in the middle of this enormous event.
Yeah, we made lots of people jealous. Kept trying to, like, walking around, like, what's going on? Can I have a piece of chicken?
And what kind of costumes do people come in?
Well, the dress code is steampunk, which is a genre that I know when I see it, but I still find really hard to explain. And it's something like sort of Jules Verne in the future, kind of Victorian, but sort of futuristic. It's like definitely an imaginary world.
Sort of futuristic
own.
Victorian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goth.
And there's also like, there's some goth. There's like a little bit of cowboy. It's kind of like if outlaws were like really nice people and all lived together in some kind of imaginary world in the future.
That is, it sounds like a lot of fun. I hope to participate in one of these events at some point.
Yeah.
You're also working on your first book.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
It's coming out fall 2010, and it's a cookbook, but it's also a collection of profiles of butchers from all over the country. Butchers who are chefs and, some of the, super famous chefs that buy whole animals and butcher them.
And so then, by butcher, you mean someone who can go from a whole animal and then break it down.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, we won't necessarily do that, but definitely someone who has those skills and who uses that philosophy of using the whole animal in their cooking. But not just chefs. I mean, people who have little mom and pop butcher shops and people who work in plants. I mean, I just want to share that kind of world that I've been immersed in the last several years. So I'll do profiles on these different butchers, and then we share a meal together, and then that recipe will be in the book. And
how do you find the chefs that you'll work with? I mean, not the chefs, the butchers.
Well, I've kind of started with people that I know are great, and then in areas where I don't know where to turn, I just start making phone calls, and it's like you get to the right person, a lot of people will start mentioning the same name.
Yeah. Who are you using locally?
I have so many that I don't know who I'm going to pick in the end, but it's definitely biased towards the Bay Area. But Taylor Bedeker from Fatted Calf and Marcia McBride from Cafe Rouge and Ari Rosen at Scopa.
Ari is so great.
So great. And a lot of other people who are still kind of maybes, but you know, maybe Paul Bertoli or so. We'll see who ends up. I'm just going to just been shooting a lot and talking to people. And
yeah, you're doing the photographs too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many chefs in the end will you have? I mean, how many butchers?
Somewhere between 50 and 60.
Uh-huh. And who's publishing?
It's Welcome Books. And they're in New York. They just published this really gorgeous book called Slow that my friend Douglas Gayton did. That's a collection of photographs and a memoir about slow food in Italy. And that just came out like last week, I think.
Cool book. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I have to look into it. Mm-hmm. So this, we can expect this in when?
Like a year from now.
A year from now. So you're working. You're staying up late.
Yeah.
Ritz, what are you working on these days?
Well, trying to survive for one thing and live through. I'll be glad when this year's over with. But just throwing my energy into Sonoma Direct. Uh-huh. And I'm basically the outside sales force. Uh-huh. So we're just, you know, we're looking for new avenues for growth. So it's been in terms of adding new ranches, sources of supply, and expanding the customer base.
Now, is this something that the ranches have really responded to? Is it really helping them be viable?
I think so. I don't know if we can say that we've saved anybody.
But they sort of see the value of sort of shifting from going to Dixon and, you know, throwing the girls to the feedlot or you know, going this other avenue.
Yeah, I think they can appreciate because we've been able to, with our knowledge of distribution and our relationships with the customer base, been able to get their products there as they'd like to see it done and, you know, on refrigerated trucks and all that, so they don't have to take it in the back of their pickup. And so it's through a distribution system, but it's still handled the way that it keeps the identity that they like to see.
Uh-huh.
I think there's been a little bit of a shift for us. When we first started, I was really kind of hell-bent on branding things as Sonoma Direct and creating an identity that people would say, like, oh, when I see Sonoma Direct in the store, I know it's pasture-raised. I know it's from Sonoma County. But people really, I don't need to mess up the connection people have with the farm or, you know, like let the farmers make their own standards and people can connect with the farm. And what we're really good at is butchering and storing and distributing.
So you also store a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's several farmers who know where I keep my keys and who know the gate code, and they come in before the farmer's market on the weekend and let themselves in and pick up, you know, whatever they need.
So everything's ready cut for what they need at the market.
Yeah, and they just keep it there because they don't have the storage, you know, at the farm. So those kinds of little things, I mean, I struggle to find a way to kind of make it into a system, but it is its own sort of messy, you know, system. And I think that kind of stuff is really helpful. Uh-huh.
So when it comes to storage, one thing that I don't think people understand is there's the slaughter or harvest, if you're squeamish. Mm-hmm. and then there's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of time really varies. Like, say, you might, you know, butcher a chicken and have it for dinner that night.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's one of the reasons that the chicken in Malaysia is so, I mean, it's the best chicken I've ever eaten. And it's just like you're eating it that day.
Yeah.
But things like lamb, pork, beef, they hang for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So couldn't we educate people a bit about that?
Well, the turnaround cycle, normally we will get the animals, the carcass back within 2 days after it was slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
And
you'll get it back. It will have been, what's the right word? It will
eviscerated.
Have been eviscerated. Anything else? Will anything else have happened?
Head off or on. It kind of depends on the animal. Usually the organs that people would want to eat are in a bag, you know, or somehow separated. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. And so from there, typically, it'll be a weekly cycle that will bring product in. So we'll have it that long. Pork doesn't need to hang very long. Mm-hmm. Beef probably ages the best.
And what would be an optimal time for beef aging?
Three or four weeks.
3 or 4 weeks.
For beef, yeah.
And with pork, would it be like slaughter today, eat tomorrow,
yeah,
or
it's
slaughter
really,
today, eat next week?
It's better fresh.
Better, yeah. Very fresh, okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Lamb? Lamb also?
Lamb, same way.
Okay.
Yeah, you definitely want that fresh taste.
What is it about beef? Is it, I've always wondered if it was just the evaporation of water, because it's so big that there has to be water, a lot of water in the cells, so there's the evaporation of the water. What are the other processes that are going on?
That's primarily it, but it's also the molecules start to break down in the muscle fibers, and so you'll get more flavor out of it as well.
Mm-hmm. So flavor
and tenderness. I mean,
tenderness,
primarily,
yeah.
From that.
Uh huh. I assume the same with rabbit, fresh.
We're not doing any rabbit right now,
oh,
so
okay.
I don't think we can speak too
and are you
smartly
doing
about usually. That. But
fresh.
I think.
And are you doing goat?
I order goat for people, but we're not like having it come in on a weekly basis. I'm still waiting for that goat revolution.
You know, it's got to go over. There's going to be that moment. There's
going to
goat. At least Bill Nyman hopes that goat is going to reach critical mass.
Yeah,
I think it might.
It's very popular worldwide, but not so much here.
Yeah, and it will. I think we'll get there. You know, that's been my feeling. But like so many things, I think we're going to get there, and then we do. But it's like 10 years after I think it's going to happen.
I know. I mean, even lamb, like if people ate just a little bit more lamb, I mean, it's like less than 1% of the meat that we eat in this country.
There's a huge bias against lamb that is always really surprising to me. I discovered lamb when I was like 4 or 5 years old, and it's an absolute favorite in my family. But somebody who was on the show, I think it was a few months ago, and they talked about it, that bias really comes from the lamb during World War II, the lamb coming from Australia, which was
the mouton.
Yes, the mutton. And really, somebody told this great story about the supply boat would come up to the big battleships. The supply boat would come up on the side, and they would have, you know, a chain of guys, you know, of sailors, I guess, offloading the meat. And whenever the boat was coming from Australia, the chain would stretch all the way to the other side of the boat. And when the lamb came, it just went all the way and back into the ocean.
Oh, man. Jeez. Well, yeah, when it travels from, well, if it travels at all, it's getting wet aged in the cryovac.
And well, wet aged is not good.
It's not good, and especially with lamb, because I think it gets a lot of gaminess when it when it ages, and the fat starts to get more of a gamey flavor.
Yeah, and I guess that lanolin flavor that some people really object to.
Yeah, I'm not into a real strong lamb flavor either, but the lamb here, it's all grass fed and it's so fresh.
It's so sweet and it's so fresh.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's totally a different thing.
Yeah, and it's we have such fabulous sheep's milk cheeses now, both sheep's milk cheeses and sheep's milk yogurt.
Yeah.
And there's just no yogurt in the world better than sheep's milk yogurt. And when you have those products, you inevitably need to have a lamb industry as well. A lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit I want to – do you have any backlash, any trouble from sort of the militant don't eat meat contingent?
No.
Good. Okay. That's good. That's good.
No.
Yeah, we haven't had any directly at all. Now, I know in the previous owner of the plant had some problems when he was selling veal, and he ended up having to put all this fencing and lighting and, and all of this up because
and certainly,
he was getting attacked.
And Sonoma Foie Gras has had, when they had their restaurant, I mean, there was so much, you know, local terrorism against them that was really tough. So I went, and there have been a few times in my column, I was just attacked for weeks when I wrote a column about rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
And all of the restaurants
that –
Yeah, all the restaurants that served rabbit, they just started getting, you know, like endless phone calls.
Yeah.
There's a letter in the newspaper comparing me to Glenn Close of Fatal Attraction, a movie I hated. I was not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm glad those people have calmed down.
I've done grocery store demos and had people get pretty aggressive with me, but other than that.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes they get distracted and they go on to other things. Yeah. And I think that that's good when they do. So we're going to take one more little musical break, and we'll be right back with all the ways that you can get a hold of Sonoma Direct here on Mouthful. So, Sonoma Direct, how do people get a hold of you?
SonomaDirect.com, or our phone number is
707-795-1283. 795-1283. Mm-hmm. It's SonomaDirect.com. Are you still involved at all with the Meat Buying Club?
They store their stuff at the plant, and they still mm-hmm. do a lot of the butchering. We do that for them mm-hmm. and help them package. And so, yeah, we're still... I always mm-hmm. like to support them and yeah. help steward that along.
Now, they were going to be, in case you don't know about the Meat Buying Club in Sonoma County, it was a pilot project through University of California Extension. And they were going to be they were going to do a one-year program and then pass it along.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to find out if it's really viable uh-huh. financially. I mean, the idea was that they would create a template that would work in any community so mm-hmm. that... anyone could have a local meat system, mm-hmm. but, they're still working the kinks out.
Yeah. And it's a hard time to work out those kind of kinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It always takes a little bit more money.
Yeah.
I think on every, it takes more money to, even at home, mm-hmm. to make the shift.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you're figuring things out
front,
and you're going to do
yeah.
things differently. Mm-hmm. And I think you spend more money initially when
yeah.
you're trying to, do something new.
Yeah, yeah. And buy 3 months worth of meat. I mean, to pay for that up front is a different, it's an adjustment for a lot of people. But yeah.
We'll okay. see. Well, I wish you tons of luck. I think I really want Sonoma Direct to be hugely successful. I just think it's a perfect business for up here. And I want people to understand and really grasp and then just really appreciate that connection with ranches. Mm. We see so many people who move here. And, oh, we're going to go live the country life. Ew, it smells. It's like, yeah.
It's stinky.
That happens. And it's yeah. like the agriculture means a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like thinking of you guys as being a really important part. And Ritz, thank you so much. I'm sorry it's been a bad year. wish you tons of luck with this new venture.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We have a great holiday season and a really bang up 2010.
Thank you.
2010, my God.
Yeah,
and good luck
with
the book.
Thank you.
I'm really excited about it. I can't wait to see it. And you'll definitely come back and talk about the book when it's out, right?
Cool. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, thank you, too, for tuning in. And be sure to meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Listen to